Good afternoon, Cape Cod and the Islands. Welcome back to episode 64 of the Cape Pod Sportscast. Wesley Sykes here, joined, as always, by the Rich McClone. Rich?
Wesley, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing very well.
You look a little tan.
I feel tan. I feel good, surprisingly, after a wedding weekend with my college buddies. But I'm ready to hop back right back into playoff mode here.
Well, you're grinding. It's that time of year. You're going to grind it out, right?
Yes, and I know you said you had a little story to start off. I'm not going to take that away from you, but I did want to give you the opportunity, because I believe the episode prior we did not, to share a little bit of news about your upcoming novel.
Oh, you kind of threw me off there. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, release date of the book has been announced. It'll be June 25th, be available online, local stores, your Eight Cousins Market Bookplace down in the Commons, Tickham's over in Sandwich, I believe.
Okay, all right.
All the Yellow Umbrella out in Chatham. You can check richmcclone.com for updates. They will be coming soon. I'll be sending out the pre-order link. I think I might have that tomorrow.
Oh, big
or
news.
Later
okay.
In the week.
Now, tomorrow is
Tuesday, the 12th?
I believe.
The
11th.
All that stuff will be available. Your pre-orders are greatly appreciated. But more than anything, if you read the book, rate it, because that moves the needle on the algorithm. So.
Absolutely. And what's the name of the book?
Season on the Brink.
Yes.
All the info, like I said, go to my website or like my Facebook fan page and all
of course,
that good
yeah.
stuff. Check the Instagram, the Twitter. It'll all be out there. Wes will probably retweet some stuff for me. We are going to...
As long as that check comes through.
Oh, well, there you go. Royalty. Oh, trust me. I'm learning about things like royalties. Yeah. This weekend, I was like doing the math. So wait, I only get that much?
But it's better than nothing. If it rolls in every once in a while, it's almost like unexpected money.
Absolutely. But that was interesting. But as far as the funny story,
yes.
Again, we say it's summer. And how do you know it's summer on Cape Cod? Well, one real big indicator is the level of crazy.
Sure. Okay.
So,
like, are you talking like traffic or
just in general?
Okay.
Just crazy in general. So, as you were driving back from the Jersey Shore,
yes,
absolute perfect Sunday. You could not have asked
for
a better day than yesterday. So, of course, you know me, a beautiful day. I'm going to go fishing.
Okay.
So, I realized that I had given my last package of hooks to my brother the last time we went. So, I ran down to the Walmart to grab a couple of packs of hooks and some bait. I run down there, the Star Trek doors whoosh open,
mm-hmm.
and I'm walking through, and you've seen it in a parking lot a million times where a car just T-boned somebody,
mm-hmm.
and they're just going their own way, and this car comes out of nowhere. Well, how about I got T-boned by one of those little carts that the old ladies...
The motorized scooters.
Yes. So,
like you personally.
I was walking in a straight line through the doors as you come through the Walmart. She was somehow tucked into the little corner that you can't even see. So,
and I'm sure you're walking with a purpose, trying to get in and get out.
And she hit me right on the hip, and I bounced. Literally bounced off, and she looked so scared. I mean, it hurt, but she looked so scared that she had hit me. That I said, I asked her if she was okay.
Did you exchange insurance information?
I should have. Yeah. Thankfully, today I feel okay. A tiny little bruise, no big deal.
You should have just grabbed your neck. That's what you. Oh, jeez. No.
Hindsight being what it is, I should have gone down to the floor in a heap, because I probably would have had quite the, the lawsuit against Walmart somehow.
That Walmart Marnie's nice too.
Tracy Morgan, right?
Right, exactly. Right, he's the great example of that. A little bit of a different
situation,
big difference.
Yeah. But hindsight being what it is, I probably should have. I don't know how it would have been Walmart's fault, but I'm sure we could have put them at fault.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, I'm back at work today because I did not in the moment think, oh, go down.
Well, that's their funds for the next book. That's the sequel right there covered.
Sequel, 2020.
Yeah, see, there we go. Tentatively in place there.
Yeah.
The big thing I took away from my New Jersey trip is that, they have rotaries. They're not called rotaries out there.
Roundabouts? Is
circles.
That circles.
Just circles, right. But
it's
the weird
Jersey,
thing.
They got to keep it simple.
So this explains a lot about foreign traffic coming over to Cape Cod and people who are unfamiliar with the rotaries. The person in the rotary in New Jersey, or the circle, if you will, does not have the right of way. They stop.
What?
Unbelievable. I was like so confused going by there. And, you know, a 6-hour drive. You know, we stopped in New York to go to the restaurant where Jules and I met where we first worked. And it was just super hectic, like trying to leave Lower Manhattan on a summer Friday at 6:30. Is not something I recommend anyone doing. It was my own doing.
Yeah.
But that was the case. Well, we got there, and we were going to stop anyway. I always knew what I was going to get myself into, but once you're in the moment, it's very tough. But getting down to New Jersey takes about an hour. It was about 45 minutes to go 3 miles just to get to the tunnel through New York. But after then, it was pretty much a straight shot. And then we're pulling up around the Jersey Shore a couple miles away, and I see that. I'm like, that's just like crazy to me.
Now, is there a sign that says that?
Yeah, so they have the yellow blinking light.
Uh-huh.
And then you just – it's kind of like a straight – it's more like an oval. So, like, you kind of have more of a straight shot instead of, like, entering the corner, if that makes sense.
Oh, it just sounds like a pileup waiting to happen.
Yeah, it's wild stuff. But that was – so now it makes a little bit of sense when you get the tourists who break in the, you know, in the rotary lane.
I went across the pond about 20 years ago. And in England, there are rotaries everywhere. What blew me away about these rotaries, though, are some of them, and they call them roundabouts, some of them are like literally the size of a half dollar.
Oh, right.
And others are monsters like you would see at the, you know, at the bridge there in Bourne. Or, well, there isn't one anymore.
Sagamore, RIP, yeah.
So, you know, some of them, you know, you literally don't, you just drive right over it. You know, it's like pointless. And then there's others that are normal size. And it just kind of struck me like they just couldn't have figured out like a standard here.
Right. You don't want to drive an SUV through that small little one. Those are tight corners, I imagine.
They were very much worse. So speaking of tight corners.
Yes.
A lot of tight corners in state tournament time.
Yes, there is. But you got any 64s for me? Oh, episode 64.
64, not a great number.
No, I got some good ones here.
Dave Wallabaugh was my favorite Patriot who wore it.
Okay. Did not have that one down.
2018, not a lot of good Patriots I found. Tyler Randall also in 2016. Four players have worn 64 for the Patriots, as far as I could tell.
All right.
Dustin Pedroia in 2006.
That's right.
He wore number 64. Will Middlebrooks wore it.
Also wore it, yes.
In 2012. Jerry Kramer.
Oh, of course.
The
who
Green Bay Packers in the 60s. He played in the Ice Bowl.
I saw a Y.A. Tittle on there, and I chose not to do it.
I'd have a hard time believing that. In
1951, only year he wore it.
That's odd. And Randall McDaniel played for the Vikings. I believe it was an O-lineman considered one of their best four or five players ever. So those are my 64s.
I got Jonathan Cooper, 64, who, of course, came over in the Chandler Jones trade from the Arizona Cardinals. But I believe that was in the time when he was with the Cardinals, not with the Patriots.
Okay.
Offensive lineman. And, of course, everyone's favorite offensive lineman bully, Richie Incognito. A couple other ones, a couple of Cape League you know, connections here. Joe Blanton, former Wareham Gateman, came up wearing 64. And so did Walker Buehler, former YD Red Sox.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Ferris Bueller's day off. There we go. He's a stud right now.
When he every time he would pitch, you'd be in the stands going, Buehler.
Yeah.
Buehler.
Exactly. Marcus Walden, who's been a nice addition to the Red Sox bullpen, pitching form so far. And then the flame-out Alan Webster. There was a time where, like, the Red Sox were probably, like, 3 or 4 years ago.
He was a thing very quickly.
Yeah, they thought, like, him, Brian Johnson, and there was another pitcher. They were, like, supposed to have the best farm system in the league, and they thought they had all these stud prospect pitchers to trade away that no one ended up wanting.
Yeah.
Alan Webster was one of them.
There you go.
Yeah.
So there's your coalition of 64s.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Here, but we're going to start off with baseball because as teams are falling by the wayside here, I believe that's the one sport that we both have a commonality in.
Yes, sir.
So let's start in D4.
Well, that would be your Mashpee Falcons. Picked up a big win over Avon. I believe that, that was Thursday. Seems like a lifetime ago.
I know it.
Avon High School last year, you'll remember, Avon had a lead on Mashpee in the seventh inning. They were one out away about six different times, and we dubbed it the Mashpee Miracle as they came back and found a way to pull that off in walk-off fashion. The Falcons did not need a miracle this time. I believe it was a 6-2 final. Jagger Bryant was absolutely outstanding, was like one above the minimum after three innings, gave up you know, a couple of unearned runs, but he had a nice lead to go with. He was up 2-0 in the, I believe it was the fourth inning. Avon loaded the bases. He hit a batter to drive in a run, but then got the next two guys, a strikeout and a pop out. And after that, they came back in the next inning in the top of the fifth and put a four spot on. So basically, that won the game. Two things about Avon that really stood out. One, you might have seen, I tweeted it out. Their home jerseys are fire.
Okay.
They look like the old Astros with the, like, the creamsicle.
Oh, nice. And the Technicolor stripes.
Yeah, the
stripes.
Orange.
Yeah.
It was really, really awesome. And their field is a sham. Just moguls at the infield.
Yeah.
A lot of errors in that game, and it's hard to, you know, for the infielders because the ball is taking really, really funky hops. And you might have noted, I don't know if, to go down a quick side street, you shoot your games from on the field, as I do, when you're taking pictures. Right?
It depends. So sometimes I go behind, I just stay behind the fence. It depends if I go, sometimes I don't always go behind the third base dugout. I usually save that for the Cape League.
All right. So I typically will shoot just to the side of, you know, either dugout.
Behind it, yeah.
Yeah. And at Avon, no problem. The umpire came up and was having conversations with me. It's like, you know, between innings. Hey, did you get that shot? You know, stuff like that. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. Yesterday, the Falmouth softball team opened their state tournament game, which series, which we'll get to. And as the game started, I went to the one spot where I can to just pass the dugout.
Home game?
Home game.
Mm-hmm.
And the umpire said, you can't be on the field.
Oh. Did you have a badge?
Yeah, I had my badge. Yeah. I had my, I had my camera, the whole deal. And I said, well, I shoot every game. I've been here for 7-8 home games and shot them, never had a problem. He goes, well, it's the playoffs. I said, okay.
Oh, he's asserting his
authority. Yeah. It was kind of like Cartman or something there. Right. But I just, I don't get it. And you see it during the tournament with, like, field hockey, where mm-hmm. they're like, oh, you can't be behind the net shooting. Well, why?
I get that with lacrosse a lot. Yeah. I try to get down to the corner. But with boys lacrosse, it's a little bit different. I think the ball's coming in a little bit harder.
Sure.
So I don't necessarily check them on that.
Yeah,
so I'm like, okay.
Lacrosse is legitimate safety issues.
Yeah.
And I usually just go anyways. But with softball, they're like, well, you're in play. Well, I can move.
I have eyes.
So anyways, that really drove me crazy yesterday.
Well, who's Mashpee got up now?
Mashpee plays West Bridgewater. They go on the road today, Monday, today. Mm-hmm. It should be a very close game. I want to say I'm blanking on Mashpee's seeding. I think they were the 5 or... It's a very close pairing-wise, seating-wise.
I think I got it pulled up here.
And West Bridgewater is good. I don't think they're great. They just got by one of the Sturgises, I believe it was, might have been West, 2-1.
So Mashpee's the 12 seed.
Oh, 12. So it's 12-5.
They beat 12-5. West Bridgewater is 4. They beat Sturgis East 4-0 in the first round.
And it being 4-0.
And that was 4-13 matchup.
Okay, so that game was 1-0, I believe, going to the 5th or 6th inning. West Bridgewater's good, but I could see Mashpee moving on. I think, I'll see if Dan Patnode got back to us. We texted to ask about his starting pitcher, and he did not get back to us as of yet. I think they're going to go Colton Collarin. Mm-hmm. I believe it's his turn in the rotation. If not Collarin, it'll be Zach Rogers. I like how they look when Collarin's on the mound. And, he's only an 8th grader, but, man, kid is made of tough stuff. I think he'll be okay.
All right. Yeah. So we'll keep an eye out for that. Obviously, follow at the Rich McClone for updates, right? Or you have out there, or you'll be getting some whispers from.
I think I'm going to have to go through my people because I have another. I have a softball game here
that's
today too.
Right.
So, like you, we got double duty today. You got like triple, quadruple duty today.
Yeah. And we'll get to that in a moment. It was, of course, starting with the Sandwich Blue Knights, who are the 5 seed in the tournament. They picked up a walk-off. I believe it was a 3-1. No, let me get the final here. Where am I? 2-1.
2-1, yeah.
Bottom of the 7th against a very familiar foe in Dennis Yarmouth. Of course, if we were following when the seeding came out, they were supposed to, or they thought they were going to be playing Martha's Vineyard in the first round due to some tiebreaker situations. The MIA thought they were going to have to redo the entire South bracket, Divisions 1, 2, 3, and 4. They go through it all. The only change that has to be made is Sandwich's opponent. They ended up getting DY for the 4th time. And, of course, just a marquee pitching matchup at Fenton Field. Cam Talbert versus Dylan Ryan. Trading zeros for The first 5.5 innings, I believe it was.
So they went Talbert instead of McCaffrey, huh?
Yes, yeah. And it worked out perfect because Dylan Ryan had not faced Dennis Yarmouth, much like Talbert, I don't think, has faced them yet. So I think that was still like a fresh matchup. I may be wrong about Talbert. I know I'm right about Dylan. So he, you know, in those three meetings, like, you know, Dylan never faced EY. So that was, I thought that was kind of a little interesting note. But Luke Irabarri drives in Sean Connolly in the bottom of the sixth inning for a 1-0 lead. Luke gets hung up at second base on a ball that looks like it might be caught, but ends up falling in. Tomasini sends him trying to get the go-ahead run with one out. He gets thrown out at second base, or at home, I should say, from trying to score from second base. Dylan Ryan just needing three outs. He had allowed one hit at that point, was just really, really dealing that day. And they're able to scratch across a run with, I believe there was an error in there, maybe a walk and a hit batter. But he gets the first out, pop out behind the catcher's mitt, you know, behind the catcher backstop there. And you think he's going to be cruising, but the 7, 8, 9 hitters kind of do their job. Two guys get on base. They scratch across the run on a well-hit single up the middle. That was the second hit of the game for DY. And then, once again, just in the bottom of the seventh inning, junior, I had a senior in my story, but junior Mike Petit, the only thing little about him is his last name, because he came up with a big stick, driving in the big game-winning run.
Beautiful.
Mobs the field, you know, gets mobbed. It's a walk-off. It's a great, great moment for them. Of course, going now, 3-1 against DY to close out the year in what was – you know, a real tooth-and-nail 12-5 matchup.
Man, I tell you, when I saw that bracket, I just shook my head, because you look at those two teams, and those are two teams that, had they been on separate sides of the bracket, that could have been a championship game.
Right, exactly.
They're both, you know, just such tough ball clubs. And Division III, you know, for whatever reason, there are a couple softballs in that on that schedule. You know, or on that bracket, there are some layups for a team like Sandwich.
I know what you're saying. You're just sounding a little bit bitter that the Falmouth Clippers didn't get in, and a team like Martha's Vineyard did. You've been hammering this point home for the last since the bracket came out.
But what I'm saying is, like, you look at last year, a team like Falmouth, you know, they went 10-10, and they went all the way to the finals because, you know, Division III in baseball, the top teams are the best teams in that bracket are very good. But there are some easy wins, and you see those two teams that very well could – either one of those teams could have won it, and I wouldn't have been surprised. You know, so I just feel like it would have been – it was really unfortunate for Dennis Yarmouth that tiebreaker broke the way
it
did.
I mean, it could have been, or, you know, it's either that or they face East Bridgewater and Liam Levangie. So, you know, if you ask me, I'd rather face the team have more experience against.
You definitely make a good point there.
But nonetheless, Sandwich advances to the D3 South quarters. They'll be playing on Monday at East Bridgewater, maybe avoiding Liam Levangie as they beat Martha's Vineyard in their first round game.
Sure.
That was also played on Thursday, the same day that Sandwich opened the D3 South tournament. So it'll be interesting to see, like you know, 3-4 days rest. Like, maybe you can trot out Ryan. Maybe you can trot out Levangie. I know Sandwich is very confident in their number two starter, fellow senior, John Tropia. And again, you know, we've talked about this countless times on this podcast, but 15 seniors on this team, up and down. Doesn't matter if you get a pinch hitter or someone coming off the bench cold or a pinch runner or whatever. These guys just have a knack for getting the job done. And it'll be interesting to see, because they played a home-and-home series this year with both team winning on the road.
Oh, well, there you go.
So that'll be interesting. And I believe one of those games was Tropia on the mound, who was pitching very well. There was a home game, and then he got hit by an errant foul ball in the dugout and broke a couple bones in his face. So he missed 2 weeks and then came back and secured the ACL championship at DY for the Knights later, you know, in his next start a couple weeks later after
his
face
healed up. Did he wear the softball mask?
I don't believe so. No. That would be interesting, though. No. So he's a hockey player, you know. That guy. Yeah. So he's a real gamer. So that'll be interesting to see that sort of pitching matchup. I'll have the updates for as long as I can. I might have to be split between some other places here. But so as long as I can, and I'll get the updates from Tomasini once that goes final, hopefully. I have a feeling if he wins, I'll get that a little bit quicker.
Well, and, you know, Sandwich High Athletics does a pretty good job, too.
Right, exactly.
So you got to figure there'll be updates there. They've done a nice job over the
years. Neil knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So let's go to the softball.
A little softball. You got your Falmouth Clippers still alive and kicking. The 3 seed in Division 2 South. We'll be playing Norton this afternoon. I'm sorry, they're the 4 seed. They're playing the 5 from Norton. Nice job the other day from freshman Haley Sylvia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many times have we seen it in a ball game? You don't see it as much in high school in softball, where you get the big batter coming up in a spot with someone who, you know, is a little bit of an easier out behind, you know, mm-hmm. coming up next. In softball, they usually just they go at the, you know, the good batter, right? They Megan Robbins got intentionally walked to get to Haley Sylvia in a tie game, 2-2, bottom of the 6th inning with runners on first and second. Of course, Robbins steals second. And God bless her, Haley Sylvia, down to her last strike, had looked bad swinging the bat. And she squares one up, puts it over the second baseman's head for the go-ahead run. Mm-hmm. And Falmouth ends up scoring again later. They end up winning 4-2. She has the game-winning knock. And, you know, couldn't ask for a bigger spot. And the freshman, you know, I asked her after the game if she was nervous. And she was a lot like Charlie McAvoy last night, you know, after the, you know, the cup game. Yeah, I was nervous. You know, it's a big spot. I've never been in that before. And she was so ecstatic and so happy. And, you know, you love to see that. And this Falmouth team, you know, that was the one spot in the lineup where they had not gotten a lot of production since Liz Tuttle went down with an injury midseason. That right field spot has been tough for them to get regular production. She came through in the big spot, and Molly Bruce did a great job pitching. Defense was solid. The Abby Pope had a huge game. And moving on, and Norton coming in with a 2-1 win against Dedham, I believe it was. So going to be probably a nail-biter this afternoon.
Okay, and that's at home at Falmouth. Yep. Very nice. Okay, so that'll be something to watch for all those seniors, and then as school lets out there, right? Just something to do today.
Yeah, 4 o'clock start over there. I'm a little bummed they didn't move it to like 3, but you know, Norton coming down from
suburbs. You forget with like graduation and like, you know, and everything else, you forget that the underclassmen are still in school. Yeah. You just think it's all over. Yeah. The Capley start, like I feel like I'm in summer mode right now. You know.
And Norton, actually, this is tough for Norton. Falmouth played on Saturday. Norton played yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised they didn't move this game into Tuesday. But I guess I want to get this tournament over with because it does seem like we're running later in the school year.
Yes, absolutely. So. Yeah, and it's weird because you don't have, you know, you didn't have as many snow days and things like that. You know, you figure everything would just
kind of be sped
up. A lot of rain
this spring, though.
That's true. Yeah, but I felt like even still, like a lot of games still got in. Like there, I feel like there wasn't a whole lot of rain out.
Well, lacrosse, not on my. Baseball and softball, there were a number. Yeah. And they extended the cutoff date into June for those two sports.
Right. So, yeah, a quick nod to the Bourne softball team. They fell in the Division III South quarterfinals, 6-1 loss to Case, a 10 seed. So that's an SEC foe there. Again, so some familiarity there. But the big news of the game or of their season was scoring an 11-8 win on the island against 2 seed in Nantucket, scoring the upset to get out of there. And that's you know, again, a situation where Nantucket plays in that Cape and Islands League. Bourne comes in with a 5-12 record or something along those lines.
And they go and get the job done.
But they play some very stiff competition in the SEC. You know, Greater New Bedford Vogt comes to mind. Wareham, I think, pushed Monomoy. I believe I might have had that right. In their first round meeting, and they also kind of crept in with a sub-500 record.
Yep.
And Monomoy, 2-loss season on the year. Again, another Cape and Islands team. So this is if you're just kind of watching the scoreboard, or you're looking at the going by record and looking at the brackets, you know, you might not think much about this Bourne team, but they came through with some timely hitting, great pitching once again, some good defensive plays, and this is a team that's not going to be losing anybody from this team. Very young squad, so continue to grow, get the playoff experience under your belt, come back next year, know what to expect.
No, I like that Bourne team a lot. I think, they, you know, they, like you said, they're so young. They were in a lot of games that they lost, you know, and I think of that walk-off win they had against Mashpee. You know,
right.
That got them into the tournament, and mm-hmm. then they used that to go over to the island and knock off Nantucket. Lady Canalman, definitely good things ahead for them on the softball field.
And that youth comes in, it's like you talk about, in Stanley Cup Finals, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So you're coming in right in, not really knowing what to expect, not really maybe grabbing the gravity of the situation. You're just going to come in and play some softball.
Like Carson Coolman.
Exactly. Exactly here. So, all right, so before we get to back and round up on some baseball stuff here, let's go to boys lacrosse.
Yes.
Where the Sandwich Blue Knights, you know, they were pegged as one of the favorites coming into the tournament around some statewide publications, at least to come out of the South. And they have not disappointed yet. They picked up a very convincing first-round win against Norwood. I believe that was like 13-7. And then followed that up with a very physical, very chippy, again, I think I want to say it was 13-8 or so against Bishop Feehan, a team that who they had already played in the regular season. And now they're found themselves on a neutral site field, the number two seed, playing against a team that they've already beaten this year once again in Plymouth South. So that game is, again, on Monday, and that will be at Hanover High School against Plymouth South. And again, yeah, it was a 13-7 win against
now,
Bishop Feehan.
If they move on, do they have a date set for the
6-13? So that would be what, Wednesday? Thursday. Yeah. And they would play the winner of Hanover Scituate.
Well, I'll tell you, I saw that Hanover team. They played Falmouth in the quarterfinals on, I think that was Friday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And that Hanover team is legit. You've seen them as well.
Yes. And that was a 13-11 loss at Sandwich High School. Very tightly contested game. Could have gone either way. But, of course, you know, two goal games in lacrosse, I feel like, are like a one-point game
and
in like most other sports.
The one thing that we've really harped on for the last 2 years with Sandwich is how good Ladner is on the faceoff X. And that, you know, advantage is, I don't want to say nullified, but it's kind of like 50-50 either way, because mm-hmm. Hanover's face-off guy, whose name is escaping me, but was just as good. He won almost every single draw against Falmouth, and that's what it came down to was,
yeah.
You know, the Clippers ended up losing that game 14-6, but it's because they just couldn't get possession of the ball, and Hanover scored on a, you know, on the opening face-off, took it down and went, but I showed up 2 minutes into the game, and Falmouth was already down 2-0. It got to 4-0. Clippers were dominating the second period and starting to look good. Colin Almeida scores on a bomb, makes it 4-1. And you're thinking, okay, maybe if they get the next one, we got a game here. And then in the last 2 minutes before halftime, Hanover scores, and then another scoop and score off the draw.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's 6-1. And Falmouth had dominated that period and still end up losing the quarter 2-1. And from there, things just, you know, Hanover never in any trouble after that. The Indians
I like
are
how
good.
You stole this conversation from me pretty quickly.
My bad. But yeah. We can come back to I just wanted to get it over
I think
with.
The story's on Sandwich here because, well, you know, we're not talking about a first-round loser in Falmouth here. We're talking about a team that's playing in the semifinals.
Round. They won their first game.
Oh, okay.
They beat Dartmouth.
Kudos. Kudos to the Clippers there.
So, no, that Hanover team's legit.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see a rematch. And again, we've harped on this all season long with the Blue Knights. It's their depth in scoring and really at all different layers. They've been able to pepper in a lot of youth. I think of Aiden Rodgers, who's had a hat trick in both games so far in the playoffs. And then you look to senior leadership like a C.J. Wiper, who's a junior, but he's a captain. Charlie Chapman came through with the first goal of the game against Norwood in their first round game, really kind of set the tone for them. And Carson Schemenauer has been rock solid in net. You know, we talked about him a lot during the hockey season. I would go on to say he's a better lacrosse goalie than he is a hockey goalie, and I think that's saying something.
Well, he's going to have to be on his game. The one thing that really impressed me about Hanover was, you know, their ability to get shots off from all over the field, and, man, they shoot the ball really, really hard. Number 19, whose name escapes me, he really had a great, you know, laser of a shot from the, let's call it the middle of the slot, out to the left side on the wing. If he let it go from that spot, it was money every single time. Jack Hamilton played one of the best games I've seen him have in the Falmouth cage, and he gave up 14.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hanover is that good. And the funny thing about the Indians, they did not make the tournament last year. They have a new coaching staff who, you know, breathed some life into that program. And want to talk about an instant turnaround.
Sure.
The number one seed.
Right, absolutely. But, you know, again, we talked about this at length. I just don't see many holes in Sandwich's game. There's a lot of depth there. They're very well coached. If you want to get physical with them, they can get physical with you. If you want to get finesse and speed and run and gun, they can do that. They dominate the faceoff circle. They're very strong in the back end. They have the youth in there to kind of fresh legs, that sort of thing.
Sure.
And they have the veterans in there to get the experience. It's just not a lot of holes that I see in this team. So I fully expect them to get by Plymouth South, who scored an 11-8 win in the quarterfinals against Canton, which was the 3 seed, and then upset Old Rochester on the road, 6-4, who was the 6
no,
seed.
We're gonna
9-4,
get a,
excuse me.
It's going to be a sandwich Hanover final, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I wouldn't sleep on Scituate just yet because, you know, Scituate comes in as the 13 seed, right? But they dominated a Bristol Plymouth team, again, a Mayflower Athletic Conference, 24-8.
Yeah.
24 is impressive no matter who you're playing, though.
I believe Hanover swept Scituate this year because I asked the coach about that, you know, how he felt about the matchup with Scituate. And I know Falmouth beat Scituate. Did Sandwich play them this year?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I think Scituate's good. They did go to the finals. Actually, they won the finals last year. They had a couple of seniors on that team. I think you're kind of – it's a year-after thing.
Sure.
So I think Scituate good, but Hanover is really good. Hanover and Sandwich, you can book it.
If you ask me, though, I would much rather face Bristol Plymouth if I was Hanover. I wouldn't want to face a team for a third time to kind of go back to that old cliche. That's a tough thing you want to do.
Oh, I agree.
You know everyone at that point. There's no secrets.
Think every team wanted to face Bristol Plymouth.
Yeah, but I mean, of the two teams, regardless of who they were, would I rather face a team that's in my league or that's not in my league? I would want to go with a new challenge.
Absolutely, I agree.
Let's circle back to some baseball here. So obviously, Falmouth was not in the playoffs here, but I did have two other teams in my region. Get through there. So in the D4 first round, we had number 8 Upper Cape Tech coming in with a record of 13-8 after they lost to the defending state vocational champion McCann Tech all the way out in Western Mass. I believe Agawam made the 3-hour drive out there, came within the final inning of getting the upset. They had a runner on second base down to the final out. 4-3 ended up being the loss there.
That's rough.
They followed that up. They had one more game to clean up at home against Southeastern. That was an easily winnable game for them in their first round in the tournament for going. You know, getting an upper seed is just the defending D4 state champion, Archbishop Williams. Bishops, I believe, is their mascot. And they have to face a stud right-hander, Miles McDermott, who pitched a complete game, struck out 10, allowed 2 hits, and just topped out at 88 miles an hour on the gun. There were scouts there in attendance there, so I made sure to read him. The Rams dugout was saying he was going around 95 or so, but so there was a little discrepancy there. But I guess 88, 95 to high school kids, like what's the difference, right? It's all blazing by you at
88,
one point.
Is he a junior, senior?
I would imagine he's a senior. He's a big kid. In D4, I don't think you're seeing upper
80s. Anything over 80 in high school is good velocity. 88's
right.
Elite.
That's
big time.
Yes, absolutely. But to his credit, someone who I think is kind of an opposite style of pitcher, kind of more, I don't want to say finesse, but more precision, a little bit more of a junk baller, and Tyler Earle, who was their senior right-hander, who they trotted out. And he went, to his credit, pitch for pitch. He won the complete game, allowed 5 runs, 2 of which were earned, 6 hits. I believe it was 5 strikeouts as well. And the game was scoreless to the first 3 innings. Top of the 4th, they get 1 run.
Yeah.
It's 1-0 until the top of the 6th. They get another run. You know, so it's 2-0. And then in the top of the 7th inning, you see Earl kind of run out of gas a little bit, gives up some back-to-back doubles. Didn't get much help in the defense prior to that. Those 3 runs they ended up scoring, obviously unearned, but a real smoke by he had to be, I think he was their shortstop. His last name Sullivan on Archie's there. One hop the fence in right field. That had to have been like, you know, it wasn't directly down the line. So that's at red 300. So it was probably something like 300 one hop the fence.
Now, what seed was Archbishop Williams for this?
9.
They're the 9 seed.
Again, no power seeding. So they play in a strong league, I would imagine.
I was going to say, you know, the Archie's may be. They're one of the 2 or 3 teams
that
really has a chance to come out of that tournament. Saw them last year, and that's just a really, really good baseball program. And when you can trot out 88 on the hill,
right?
That's, you know, that is a that is a weapon that not a lot of teams can match.
Yeah, and it was interesting because, like I said, I've loved Upper Cape's defense this whole season. That kind of let them down a little bit. The Sun was in a weird spot. Both teams kind of had trouble fielding a lot of fly balls. I know Upper Cape is kind of getting – when they were making contact under McDermott, they were getting under the ball.
Sure.
And just kind of popping it up. But the sun was directly in your eyes there on a beautiful day at 6:30. So you're getting right at that golden hour. But I think to their credit, it was a nothing-nothing game. They're hanging with them. Gabe Coutinho opted to bunt a little late. And I think I want to say it was the fourth inning. They're already down 1-0. And maybe cause at that point, they really – like the defense, the Archers' defense hadn't had to do anything.
Sure, sure.
Drop down a couple bunt, maybe get them back on their heels, fielded them cleanly. I thought that might be the way and kind of play some small ball and hope to kind of bait them into some errors.
Yeah.
But they answered that call nicely. Jared Westgate with the hit. Aiden Rooney with another hit. Jeremy Wurzburger walked twice. And Riley Thornell with a gun down at third base to catch a would-be Steeler to end an inning. Those are about the highlights there. But great season for the Rams. And then also in Bourne, really got hosed with their dates here, playing in the preliminary round game after the entire first round had already been completed.
Oh.
That's a little bit of a nod because the winner of that game would face number one seed St. John Paul. So I think that was more of an advantage for St. John Paul getting the extra day off as the top seed, more than sliding. Right, exactly. So they played a 17 seed Millis, two wins on the year. But again, they play in a Tri-Valley league that's very, very competitive. I believe Franklin's in that league, which was a Super 8 team.
Tri-Valley is a great league.
It's the Sullivan rule.
I know, but oh my gosh. Sometimes that's where it reaches ridiculous levels.
Well, I was telling everyone who I was talking to, I was talking to head coach Sean Donovan before the game, a couple of players that I saw at the Upper Cape game. I said, don't sleep on their record because they play in a good league here. Don't look by them. And it ended up being a 6-5 win for Bourne at home in 11 innings.
Well, and the thing, too, is it's baseball. And, you know, anytime baseball, if you have a good pitching performance, you're in the game.
But even just just throw their record out for a second. The teams that they were playing against in that Tri-Valley League, again, pretty well respected,
Hopkinton,
I would say.
Hopkinton, I think, is in that league.
Yeah, 2-run losses, 1-run losses, 3-run losses. You know, so they're in every game. And it's not like 1-0, like, their offense was still producing runs, and it was like 7-6, you know, 6-4.
Similar to their tournament game. They're close,
right?
But can't get over the hump.
Yeah. So, you know, I was credit to them. They made what ended up being the smart move, starting their number two starter, James Cahoon, and then doing a combo with Nick Card, who, by all accounts, I was on vacation at this point, was pitched an absolute gem out of the bullpen in relief for them.
Yep.
Really carried them, and then opted for their starter, Ben Smith, in the first round game, which had to be played a day later. So they play on Friday, turn right around after 11 innings, and then play Saturday afternoon at Mass Maritime. So the travel's not there. That's, of course, where St. John Paul is playing, while McKeon Stadium was getting refurbished.
Which is odd, because they opened McKeon tomorrow. I don't know why they couldn't have played there.
They probably just said, don't even bother. We're just saving this for the Cape League.
All right.
Yeah. They already probably had the deal worked out and at Mass Maritime. You know, I would argue that's the best field in Bourne, regardless of Doran Park.
No, Mass Maritime's beautiful.
So, you know, you got a great, you know, home field advantage, great view of a game right there. But a 7-4 loss in what was a rematch, of course, of their famous quarterfinal game. Maybe infamous game of a missed call on Kyle Swift, applying the tag between third on a rundown in a game that I believe was tied at the moment.
One of the best photos you've ever had.
That would probably be the only one that I'll ever have, a good one there. But, yeah, so that was, again, a heck of a season for the Canalmen. That's all wrapped up here. You have some girls lacrosse action?
Falmouth got hammered in the first round, 23-2. Went against maybe if not the best team in the state, one of the best teams in the state. And I believe Danny Shea and Colleen Caswell had goals. Falmouth scored one in each half. Coach Derek Zara told me the defense actually played well, just that they had Westwood had the ball from start to finish, barely any possession. They won all the draws. He said they are good and they're better than advertised. Wow. So, you know, that's that.
That's what you got. Okay, no, because so no Mashpee.
Yeah,
Sandwich Girls Lacs. They had their season upended. I believe it was 13-9 to Hanover, a four seed. That is the same team that ousted them last year in that same game in the quarterfinal round. And they also beat them this year. I believe it was also in Sandwich. So this is a team that they knew going into it, how good and how high of a level that they play at, but couldn't get over the hump against them. The game prior to that was the one I was actually able to see. It was a real overtime thriller. Sandwich falls out of the gates against number 12, Ursuline, who shows up late, 45 minutes late to the game. And there's no apparently information on them. There was no scouting, so no one really knew what to expect. Yeah. She knew head coach Kelsey Beaton, when I say she, knew that they were going to be a tough team because they played Braintree tough and Braintree played Marshfield tough, so ipso facto, that sort of thing. So she was expecting more of a dogfight than what the 12-5 seed suggested. And she was right. You know, they're down, I want to say, 5 goals at halftime, 7-3, 8-4, 7-8-3, I think it was.
They were
at
down
the time.
5 at least. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And even then, there was 8-2, and they had to get the goal, you know, a goal with like a minute or two left in the first half to kind of carry some momentum over in the second half. And then they go on like a 9-1 scoring run, take a lead. They actually have a 3-goal lead. So the score's escaping me at this point. A 3-goal lead with about 2 minutes left, I've heard Kelsey Beaton say this a million times. When we have that lead and we have possession late in the game, don't shoot the shot.
Yeah, run the clock.
Yes, I don't care if you're 8 meters out. These are like her exact words. Don't shoot the shot. You know, we pass it around. We're killing the clock because the best way to keep a team from scoring is to possess the ball, right? They have 3 different girls shoot shots.
Oh, no.
And then at this time, you know, the Blue Knights thought they were better conditioned, and that's how they were able to kind of get themselves back into the game. But obviously with the game on the line, it was a little bit of a last-minute flurry of shots, however you want to say it, by Ursuline, able to tie the game up. Sandwich has one shot left, like has two chances, one on a free position, and then another one that followed up after the shot went out of bounds. So it was like 20 seconds left, really in close, misses it. I think it was actually a good save by Ursuline goalie. And then they get out of the corner. They get the out-of-bounds shot attempt with, like, 10 seconds left.
Yeah, restart.
That goes awry. So it goes to 6 minutes sudden-death overtime where they switch halves at the three-minute mark. Or yep. Switch sides on the three-minute mark, I should say. And didn't even need that. I believe it was about 40 seconds into overtime. Sam Garassi ends up winning the draw. And that was really the big impetus behind their comeback, is that they were kind of switching out 3, 4, 5 girls in the first half about who was going to win this draw against Ursuline. Sam Garassi, senior captain, going to be playing at D2 South, Florida Southern, D2, next year.
In the South.
Yeah, in the South, right. And she's like, no, I got this. I feel like I got it. I feel like I got it figured out. I know how the referees are calling these draws now. She said that they were favoring one side in particular.
Yeah.
However that works out, I'm not entirely sure, but that's what she was saying after the game. She wins the draw. They're doubling, tripling teamer. She's taken the foul, free position, advancing, foul, free position, goal. And that was it. That was done. It was a game. It was an exciting game. Again, you go down 5 goals at home like that. You're the higher seed. You know, this team's been red hot all year.
Yeah.
And it was a nice, fitting way for them to, have their final home game for those 4 seniors.
That's a great way to end it. Just, you know, too bad that it didn't work out with them against Hanover.
Yeah.
At this, the tournament, they just fall like flies. It's one game and then the next one, the next one, the next one.
Right.
Not a lot of teams left standing at the end.
No, and Kelsey had said after the game that, we may have been able to get away by playing a bad first half against Ursuline, but you need a near perfect game
to
against
Hanover. Sure.
And, I think it was a 1-goal game at halftime and then they may have ran out of gas there.
Yeah.
But again, a great season overall. I'll have another game, D3 South. Girls tennis. So the 10th seeded Sandwich Blue Knights here picked up a 5-0 win in the first round against 7th seeded Westport, and then followed that up with a 4-1 win against the 2nd seed in the tournament, Sacred Heart. In the quarterfinals, they are playing number 6 Cohasset in the D3 South semifinals on Monday. So I will be going from East Bridgewater for Sandwich baseball with a quick stop in Cohasset for girls tennis, and then making my way over to Hanover for the Plymouth South Sandwich game. So I'm all over the South Shore today.
Yeah, and I'm just going to be here in Falmouth watching softball. And, a little housekeeping. Colin Collarin, Coach Dan Patton out did email text me while we were podcasting yes. here. Colton Collarin will get the ball today for the Falcons.
Very nice. And that is a post 188 player.
He plays on the junior team.
On the junior team. Yeah, would they allow an eighth grader on the team if he was that good? Like on the senior team?
No.
It's an age thing?
I think maybe. I don't know, because I know that some kids from the junior team do swing. You know, they're 15 and 16-year-olds, but he's being an eighth grader. I don't think they would have put him in that pressure anyway, especially when you have that great, you know,
right.
opportunity to season him. But we're going to be saying that name for a long time.
I would have loved to see him go up against some college players. Like that would be kind of interesting. Yeah. You know?
Well, he's going to be going up against some seniors, I'm sure, today.
Yeah.
And he has all year. So good luck to the Falcons. That's going to be interesting.
All right. So we got about 15 minutes left. You want to talk a little Bruins hockey?
Sure. Why not? All tied up going to game 7. And your guess is as good as mine as to what is going to happen, because this series has not made a whole lot of sense.
I think it's almost a disadvantage that they're playing at home.
Yeah, St. Louis is a better road team than they are home.
And the
team.
Bruins have been great on the road, too. And you talk about, you know, say what you will about the ice not being as sharp at home. It gets a little bit humid. It's a little bit murky there. I don't think that I think that favors a heavier-footed team in the St. Louis Blues, and it would a team that relies – I would say the Bruins are well-rounded, but I would say
they're
they
more skillful team.
Right, yes. But they're heavy, too. Don't get me wrong.
But, you know, the ice condition's similar in St. Louis, because I actually saw the weather yesterday in St. Louis. Was 80 degrees there yesterday.
But it's more on the stadium.
Yeah, that's true,
right?
Too.
Right, so it's like – it's. I know the weather, outdoor weather, has – an effect on it, but it depends on how well
the humidity,
your stadium is running.
You know, it would, I would say St. Louis would have the advantage if not for two things. One, I have a hard time seeing a world we live in the way Tuukka Rask is playing. Where
unbelievable
in
closeout games.
I mean, he had 3-0 in elimination games. He was as close to perfect as could be in game 6 last night. He is playing at the elitist of elite levels right now.
Well, he's even better in elimination games if you think about when they were facing elimination, like last night, for example, right? So not even for Bruins closeout games.
No,
but
3-0, I think, in games where the Bruins are facing elimination. They had a game 7 against Toronto.
Yep.
Oh, maybe that was it. So,
and it was a game 6 against
They weren't facing elimination.
In closeout games.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So in closeout game, he's perfect.
Right.
He's perfect. And the other thing is Binnington. This kid has had a Cinderella year. No doubt about it. This is really
a great
story.
He's
got a screw
loose, though.
Exactly. And last night, you know, as the game progressed, he got worse and worse. I really felt like the moment was too big for him last night.
Some weak goals. That Carson Kuhlman goal notwithstanding.
The Kuhlman goal was beautiful. The one by Carlo from the right point, you know, that fluttered. That one, you got to stop that one.
And that one, but that was a little misdirection, right?
As slow as it is, you have plenty of time to get to that far post.
And it just went under his elbow something like that? 7 hole? Is that what they call it? 7-9?
Yeah, so it was he's not been great, and I think the moment's going to be too big for him. And the Bruins have enough leadership in that room where they have been, you know, they've been to games like this. They've got a bunch of guys who've won cups. I think that experience plus Tuukka, I think the Bruins win 3-2. And the Bruins, this is my favorite stat. When the Bruins score 3 goals in a game in the playoffs, they are undefeated.
Really?
I mean.
But now, do you imagine seeing 3 goals in a game, game 7? I feel like those are usually tightly played. Late goals, low scoring.
There hasn't been a game 7 in the cup final since 11.
Well, just game 7s
no,
in
no,
general,
no, you're
but
right,
yeah.
You're right. I just have a feeling that it's going to go a lot like last night did. I think through 2 periods, you're looking at a 1-0, 2-1, 1-1 type of game. I think in the 3rd period, the Bruins are going to break through. That place is going to be going bonkers.
I'm sure. But, same thing. Like, St. Louis was going bonkers. They bring in Pam Beasley.
Well, yeah.
Who might says more about St. Louis than anything else.
But you know what? That place seemed really tight to me. As soon as the Bruins took the lead, I never felt like that crowd was really, into it. That was nervous energy they had last night. That reminded me of a Red Sox playoff game pre-2000. Yeah. Like, they were, you could tell that they were just nervous. And, I mean, how funny is it, though, like the St. Louis Post-Dispatch? You see that where they put out, you know, their congratulations ads and stuff, you know?
And, like, how do you do that? You know, I understand you have to get advertisers to back it up beforehand so you can roll it out that way. But how does that let that slip?
You can't let it leak.
Yeah.
You can't let it leak.
And obviously the Bruins are doing the same thing that St. Louis is doing about preparing a parade route. What day are we going to do? We have to save a room at Foxwoods or wherever the celebration's going to be. You have to make those plans in advance.
But you don't let it get out.
Right.
You don't let it get out. No, if you've never been there before, then you don't know how to act in these. Remember the Pittsburgh Steelers all those years ago, you know, had already told their players what to do about Super Bowl week before they played the Patriots. I believe that was in 2001 when they won the first one.
I think you're right.
The Pittsburgh Steelers had already told their players what to do in terms of, you know, taking care of family and everything for the Super Bowl. And it's like, hey, wait a second. You haven't won the AFC yet. So, the Bruins have been there before. They had the experience. You know, we can talk till, like, WEEI, all I heard on the way in was, you know, people complaining about the thuggery and the goon tactics of St. Louis. And there's no doubt. They have crossed lines in this series.
Sure.
And, you know, they have gotten away with things.
Does that care? Because who is it? Not Bozak.
Berube?
Berube. No. The guy who got taken off the ice for hitting Achari.
Oh, at the end.
It's a B name. I'm blanking on it.
And it's not Bozak, and it's not Barbashev, and it's Bartuzzo.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, something just clearly going at his arm, you know, go with the cross-check, punch in the face, you know. And then someone after that gets thrown out of the game. You know, does that sort of thing carry over where you're saying, okay, you got us here. I'm already looking to get in your head.
Yeah, but
seven.
You know, that also shows me that the Bruins are in their head, you know, because they're frustrated and that's the only way they can act out because they know they're not as good skill-wise as Boston.
Mm-hmm.
The Bruins have, you know, from line one to line four, the Bruins have more skillful players. I mean, O'Reilly's been fantastic in this playoff for St. Louis.
If St. Louis wins, he's got to be the Conn Smythe,
I would think so. And Tarasenko puts the fear of God in me. That guy can flat out fly and he is a great player. But, you know, Maroon and Barber. I mean, a lot of these guys are just,
they're
a lot like their head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been taking liberties throughout this series. The thing that is a little scary is that game sevens, referees tend to swallow the whistles.
Right.
You know, they have got to.
I like that, though. That's what I want.
Too, but, you know, the dangerous plays have to be called.
Yeah.
Like, and the one that, you know, Marchand. Definitely a slew foot, you know, trip, whatever you want to call it, in the corner yesterday, and he got called for it. Dumb play, dirty play. He went to the box. He should. You know, the same we wish could be said for Bozak in game five. But
so here's my thing on this. So do you not call it at that point because it wasn't called a game before under a different referee who's clearly not going to be back in this series?
Listen, that was,
or do you call it like you see it at that point, and then
like
you set the precedent at that point saying this isn't going to stand?
I thought it was awesome that they called it because it was the right call.
Right.
You know, I just thought it was funny that it was almost identical, little different place on the ice, you know, up the wall and you know, in the corner. But still, I love that the referee called that. And, you know, I don't mind when the Bruins are on the penalty kill either.
Right.
You know, the Bruins' penalty kill has been flat out fantastic.
As good as the power plays.
Yeah, exactly. Better, maybe.
Right.
Have they given up one power play goal in the series?
I'll go with you on that, yeah.
You know, they've been fantastic. I like the Bruins' chances, but it's game seven, so you throw it all out. You know, who knows? Maybe Binnington, you know, is Marty Brodeur in game seven and Tuca's a sieve. I don't know because it's game seven.
Or he's, you know, Tuca in the World Cup or whatever it was for Sweden there having the dietary gastral issues.
Exactly. Well, I like Halak. I think Halak is the second best goalie
coming
in the series.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you there.
So,
yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, anytime you hear those two words. Game seven.
It's a beautiful thing.
I'm there.
Cups in the house. It'll be there. Now, do you want to talk about that Bozak hit a little bit?
All right. I believe that.
We got 6 minutes left,
so I'll let
mind frame.
All right. Real quick, You might have seen it on you might have seen our little discussion on Twitter. I believe clear trip, awful call, awful non-call. Wes agrees it should have been a penalty, but he thinks that Achari embellished.
Yeah.
And he sold it, and he thinks that's why they didn't call it.
Yeah, well, because here's my thought process on it, right? So now I've got about 50-50 response that night. It was probably more like 60-40 when I woke up the next morning okay. in favor to your argument.
Yeah.
But it was about 50-50 split of my mention saying I agree or I disagree. Now, where I go with this, right? So Sutherland was the goalie or the referee who
sure.
was right behind the goalie. Now, had a clear view of the entire play.
View.
Right, so how does he miss that call? Right, so that's my first thought.
Yep.
And as an inquisitive person who's paid to ask questions, why would he not make that call?
Because he
is it simple enough just to say he missed it? No, that's not satisfactory to me. So in my mind, well, what would make him do that? This whole series has been embellished on both sides.
Yeah,
and that's been a tactic, and that's not a knock. That I'm not questioning anyone's manhood about that. I just think that's how the series has gone. So he's trying to get the call to oversell the point that maybe some things that weren't called in the past, well, okay, this is what I have to do. So that's not a knock on Achari. I'm not calling him less of a man for that or saying that he's a wuss.
Well,
he's trying to help his team. I also think had he not over-embellished it, he probably wouldn't have landed on his head. But we can disagree about that. I also think at that point, you're not calling anything if you're Sutherland because there's an infraction on both sides.
See, I talked to Paul Moore about it, ran into him yesterday, and he said where the referee really screwed up is he should have thrown both of them in the box.
Right. So you get the 2-minute minors or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Minors to both people.
And then, everyone in Bruins land would be irate that the embellishment got called against them, but the play stops and the goal doesn't happen. And really that's where where everyone lost their mind is that led to a goal. So, I think that Paul brought up a really fair and good point. I still think it's a clear trip simply because of body positioning where he came from behind and took out the leg from behind.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not – I don't think there was even time to think about embellishment because he never saw the hit coming because it came from the rear. A lot of times you'll see a trip, they come around and they hook through.
Right.
You see them and then you have the time and the thought – to be able to dive, but where it's coming from behind, I don't think he had that time. So I don't think it was an embellishment as much as he had that left leg taken out, and then the right just kind of really goes, But
it was a bicycle kick.
It certainly. But the thing is, too, is sometimes that does happen. Especially we see these things slow mode so much, where
sure.
every movement is exaggerated. When it goes at full speed, it's really hard to tell if that was an embellishment or not.
That was my initial thought right off the bat. And that wasn't even me, dipping my toe in the water to see, how everyone would react.
But in my defense,
that was a genuine, reaction that I had.
I was so pissed off.
Oh,
in
of
that
course.
Moment.
Everybody was. Everybody
I was. Yeah.
Now, I'm less invested into this.
Yeah.
Had that been, a Celtics or Patriots game or something
sure.
like that, I would probably be right there with you.
You know me. I watch as much during the regular season as I can.
Right.
And I have not missed I can't say that. I think I've missed one period of playoff hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So I watch everything, and I'm invested. It's so much fun for me because we have to cover all these teams all the time. We go to so many different games that come playoff time, it's nice to say, okay, this is my team, and I'm going to live and die with them. And when they go on a magical run and they make it this far, it just is, it's dialed up to 11.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It's
great. First game 7 in TD Gardens since
Wednesday
when,
night,
right?
It's going to be dialed up to
86,
a million.
86, is that? I can't remember. I don't know the last time. It's been
1970.
Going around. Okay, yeah.
1970.
For either?
This is the first game 7 in the history, I believe, of St. Louis. Cause they had
No. I mean for either the Celtics or the Bruins, inside the Garden.
Oh.
I feel like the Celtics might have had a game 7 in
championship
there.
Game 7?
Yeah.
86, they went to, I think that series was only 5 or 6 because that was against Houston. And they dominated that series. Maybe
we'll
84.
Go 70, though. 70 works.
70 was the last time for
the
hockey team.
Yeah.
Maybe 84 against the Lakers.
Okay. long time nonetheless.
It's been a very long time. It hasn't. I told my son this morning, yeah, it's the first game seven since 1970 for the Bruins. He's like, oh, wow, you weren't even born then.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there we go. So, okay, so we'll get something to look forward to. We'll have some Cape League stuff coming this week. We have a little post 188 stuff coming this week. And we'll be wrapping up with the rest of our playoff games. So enjoy Game 7, enjoy some playoffs, and enjoy some free baseball, some free quality baseball this summer.
Oh, absolutely. Peace.